This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
A nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus, and non-believers.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is the only national radio broadcast dedicated to non-believers, infidels, atheists, agnostics. And hey, we rated a mention in the presidential inaugural address last week, and isn't that nice for a change?
He was talking about us. I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist.
Free Thought Radio is broadcasting and streaming live.
The show is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a national organization working to keep state and church separate and to educate the public about the views of the atheists and agnostics and non-believers in America.
Today's guest will be Jason Torpy. It will be on the second half of the program. He's going to talk about unbelievers in the military, the many state church problems dogging the U.S. military, especially under the reign of George W. Bush.
But first, let's chew over the event of the week, or maybe it was the event of the year, or the event of the century maybe, Barack Obama's inauguration as America's 44th president. And Annie Laurie, what's happening with our and Michael Newdow's inaugural prayer challenge?
As regular listeners to Free Thought Radio know, Mike Newdow flew to D.C. last week to argue on behalf of himself and us about 33 other plaintiffs that include the National Freedom From Religion Foundation, Dan, myself as private plaintiffs, and many other groups and individuals. And he went to argue that Christian prayer altogether should not be a part of the official inauguration. And last Thursday, January 15th, U.S. District Judge Reggie Walton refused to issue a restraining order against the inaugural committee for inviting two Christian ministers to open and close the official presidential swearing-in. The judge also refused to restrain Chief Justice John Roberts from tacking on those words, "So help me God," to the secular presidential oath provided for word for word in the U.S. Constitution.
And later on, we'll listen to that slightly mangled presidential oath.
But the lawsuit itself was not kicked out. It proceeds. It's already educated the nation. It's inspired a lot of coverage about the fact that the so-called tradition of adding an oath to God in the presidential affirmation, in fact, did not date to the first inauguration of George Washington in 1789.
In fact, let's listen to a clip about this issue that's being discussed on last week's CBS Sunday Morning. This is an excerpt from a report by Bob Schieffer, in part interviewing the author Jim Bendat.
I, Franklin Delano Roosevelt,
do solemnly swear.
I will faithfully.
The ceremonies have evolved over time. Even the origin of the closing line of the oath, "So help me God," is in dispute.
The United States.
So help me God.
So help you God. So help me God.
The myth is that George Washington added those words following the inaugural oath in 1789. Yet, no one ever wrote that he said those words until 65 years later, in 1854. Maybe he said them, maybe he didn't.
And on that same show, CBS Sunday Morning, here's author Calvin Trillin, you know him through his little poems in Nation magazine, making this point about the inauguration.
It's more appropriate to have a poem than a prayer.
So let's go to the actual inauguration. Let's listen again to those words of President Barack Obama from his inaugural speech.
For we know that our patchwork heritage is a strength, not a weakness. We are a nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus, and non-believers.
Of course, a lot of us were less pleased with all that religion going on at the inauguration, particularly the choice of Reverend Rick Warren of Saddleback Church, a noted critic of gay rights, whose church does not even permit what it calls homosexuals to become church members. Warren was on pretty good behavior, didn't you think, Dan? But
well, I don't know about that.
He made some pretty benign, inoffensive comments in general, but boy, he set my teeth on edge from the get-go.
Let us pray. Almighty God, our Father, everything we see and everything we can't see exists because of you alone.
What a thing to say in a country that's based on we, the people, with a secular constitution. Many of us don't believe in this God who created everything we see and everything we don't see. Listen to another one of Reverend Warren's highfalutin comments.
Help us, O God, to remember that we are Americans, united not by race or religion or blood, but to our commitment to freedom and justice for all.
Which sounds very good, but so we have a commitment to freedom, but Reverend Warren believes that abortion should be entirely banned in our nation. And he says justice for all, well, not for the gays in his home state, where he campaigned for the adoption of Proposition 8, repealing marriage equality.
When we fail to treat our fellow human beings and all the earth with the respect that they deserve, forgive us.
So, should we forgive Reverend Warren?
No.
And here's where Reverend Warren, who had restrained himself, got around to his Christian message.
I humbly ask this in the name of the one who changed my life, Yeshua, Isa, Jesus, Jesus, who taught us to pray, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
And a little later, we'll talk about why certainly prayer should at least be non-denominational, according to the Supreme Court.
Reverend Joseph Lowry, who was apparently supposed to balance the selection of the right-wing Reverend Warren, of course, with Lowry's illustrious civil rights history, he ended the inauguration with a benediction. Reverend Lowry referred repeatedly to the Lord, but he did not custom tailor his prayer just for Christians only, as Reverend Warren did, which is much to Lowry's credit.
We thank you for the empowering of thy servant, our 44th president, to inspire our nation to believe that, yes, we can work together to achieve a more perfect union.
And of course, we appreciate the thought of working together to achieve that grammatical impossibility, but a lovely sentiment, the more perfect union, from the preamble of the Constitution. But Dan, I know you were bothered by this remark.
Well, because Lowry says that Obama was empowered by God for his office.
To be a servant.
Yeah, and actually he was empowered by we the people. We picked him. God didn't pick him. God didn't anoint him. This is not a coronation. This is not a religious service. This is our service as secular Americans to welcome our new president.
So we have heard this inclusion of the words unbelievers in President Obama's inaugural address. And here's something else I was glad to hear from Obama.
We'll restore science to its rightful place and wield technology's wonders to raise healthcare's quality and lower its cost.
Which is a reference not just to embryonic stem cell embargo that Obama is going to lift, but to the Bible thumpers, the anti-choicers, even the creationists who were invited in by President Bush to infiltrate so many positions at the NIH and other federal boards and programs.
And I also kind of like the sound of this next clip from the inaugural. It's an interesting mix of secular and scriptural.
On this day, we come to proclaim an end to the petty grievances and false promises, the recriminations and worn-out dogmas that for far too long have strangled our politics. We remain a young nation, but in the words of Scripture, the time has come to set aside childish things.
I like that worn-out dogma reference. So, hail to the chief.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. And the 21-gun salute is not for our show. Of course, that's the music that was played right after the presidential oath of office. Free Thought Radio will be talking. We'll be right back to talk with the head of military atheists and freethinkers. When we come back from the break, we'll take a closer look at that litigated presidential oath of office and the garbled recitation by the Chief Justice that will put that one into the history books.
I'm Michael Newdow, and this is Free Thought Radio.
Thank you. If you don't believe in God, or if you have a problem with organized religion, there is a new radio show just for you. The Liberal Radio Network, Air America, has a new program called Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we've been talking about the inauguration, the highs and the lows in terms of religion and free thought. That music you're listening to is the music that was played at the inauguration by a quartet of people, including Yo-Yo Ma and Ishtok Perlman, John Williams' arrangement of Aaron Copland's Appalachian Spring. And there's quite a history there. When Eisenhower was inaugurated in 1953, Aaron Copland was supposed to be there to perform his music, but a Republican senator thought he was too liberal and too close to communism, so they canceled it. And Aaron Copland said, this is not an exact quote, but Copland said, you know, someday when I die, my politics will die with me, but I hope my music will be able to live on long past the views of any Republican senators. And sure enough, we got to see Aaron Copland's music. And Aaron Copland, by the way, was, as you know, Annie Laurie, not only gay, openly gay, but a non-believer. So we had
he was out of two closets.
That's right.
And good for him.
And he was very defiant. In fact, he refused to show up at Nixon's inauguration because of his politics.
Good taste. So we'd like to replay that garbled oath of office by Barack Obama last week, which Mike Newdow and FFRF and many others challenged, asking not that Barack Obama be restrained from adding the word, so help me God. We did actually write him and suggest that he stick to the text in the Constitution, but our lawsuit did not name Obama. We felt that he did have free speech rights.
He does, yeah.
The right to bad taste, if he wanted, to add religion, but that the Chief Justice, in carrying out the duty to, did not have the right to dictate wording other than that in the oath of office in the Constitution.
So maybe our lawsuit is the reason why Chief Justice Roberts put a definite question mark after the words when he added those words, so help you God. Listen to the oath.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear
that I will execute the office of President to the United States faithfully.
That I will execute
the office of President of the United States faithfully. And will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
That is kind of funny to listen to. Now, there's speculation that the Chief Justice termed that as a question, so help you God, because he's being sued and by us, and he knows it. And maybe he thinks that he'll wiggle out of the lawsuit because he put it as a question.
Well, that question came outside of the oath, right? So that he can't be accused of mangling the oath.
And that alone is a victory, I think. At least I'd like to see that question mark added in the future. And now I wanted to talk about what is wrong with having Christian ministers open and close the inauguration, and only Christian ministers, which is the history in the 20th century. We had Reverend Lowry, who did keep his prayer non-denominational, but many believers in this country and elsewhere would not be praying to the same Lord that Lowry was mentioning. And of course, it was laudable, but it did exclude atheists and agnostics. But Reverend Warren, as we heard in that first segment, ended with Jesus.
And Jesus, Isa, and Yeshua.
He wanted us to hear it in all the different languages, except Arabic. And legally, what is wrong with this is that the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled in Marsh versus Chambers, that's a 1983 case, that if you have prayer by a legislature, if it's a tradition, maybe you can have that, but it has to be non-denominational. In other words, you don't have a sectarian prayer. You don't invoke Jesus Christ, for example. Or if you were having a Hindu prayer, you don't have a Hindu prayer, you don't have a Jewish prayer, you don't have a Christian prayer.
Actually, I think Isa is the Arabic word in the Quran that they use for Jesus. So.
And so anyway, the Fourth Circuit just let stand, the Fourth Circuit just issued a decision saying that a city could not have a prayer to Jesus. And the Supreme Court was appealed to by the religionists, and the Supreme Court let that decision stand. And they said, you cannot pray to Jesus to open a city hall meeting. So if you can't pray to Jesus to open a city hall meeting or a town meeting, why can you open a presidential inauguration with Christian prayer? In other words, don't discount the Newdow lawsuit here. We are on firm grounds. The law is on our side. And then furthermore, the Marsh decision said that the only reason you could open a legislative session with prayer is if it had been traditional. This dated to the 1840s in Nebraska.
And but this was only in the 1930s,
exactly.
Right?
The first ministers were not invited to open with prayer and close with prayer until 1937. Many more inaugurations have taken place without Christian prayer than with.
So FDR's first inauguration did not have clergy-led prayer.
So it is not a tradition. So under the Marsh parameters, we should win. And so it's something that's, I think, very important, and it's raised a lot of consciousness in educated people.
Because we are a nation of we the people, which should include all of us, right? Newdow's legal complaint not only shows that So Help Me God did not begin with George Washington, contrary to the myth, became a tradition just before the 20th century, but that inviting outside ministers to pray at the inauguration did not occur until the Depression, really, and it was not a tradition until that time.
So we'll see what happens. The case hasn't been dismissed, and we hope it gets somewhere, and we know already that it's had an educational impact.
Well, just read the briefs that Michael Newdow wrote. They're quite educational with history.
You can go to restorethepledge.com website. You can go to ffrf.org and look up the complaint.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is more of Aaron Copeland in the background. On the wish list of state church separation advocates and many free thought groups for the new administration is a big change in the military with its increasing promotion of religion. We'll be talking with the president of the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers, Jason Torpy, about that right after the break.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Beware of dogma.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and our guest today is Jason Torpy, who serves as the president of the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers, a national community for non-theistic veterans. Jason Torpy also serves on the board of the Secular Coalition for America and the American Humanist Association. He's been active with the non-theist community since entering the military. He's worked on issues of separation of church and state, and equal opportunity for non-theistic service members in Army basic training, Army parachutist training, military academy programs, and in combat situations. His education includes a Bachelor of Science degree in Engineering Management from West Point, a Master's degree in Business Administration from The Ohio State University.
Jason Torpy enlisted in the Army in 1994 as an intelligence interceptor. After earning top graduate honors from two intelligence training programs, he was offered direct admission to the United States Military Academy. After graduating, Jason was commissioned as an officer, served for 5 years in Germany, Kuwait, and Iraq with the Army's 1st Armored Division. He left the service in 2005 at the rank of captain to pursue an MBA. He currently lives in New York City, and we're talking with him on the phone. He travels for his job. He's in Arkansas right now. Hello, Jason. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Dan. How are you?
Oh, fine. It's good to talk to you again. I saw you a couple weeks ago for the board meeting of the Secular Coalition for America, which your group and our group are both members of.
Yes, that's true.
So tell us a little bit about MA, Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers. Why did you start it?
Well, the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers, we're going to call that MAF.
MAF.
From now on, just to be simple, we might remind the name a couple of times. So MAF, and you can find it at maf.info. I started the organization because of what I had seen in the military. There was a lot of religion, a lot of support programs, a lot of places to go and things to do and fun times to be had to help service members feel like they were part of the team if they were religious. there was a lot of support from the chain of command, you know, prayers and admonishments to make sure to go to church from the chain of command for people that were, you know, part of traditional religions, people that were theistic. But none of that for non-theism.
You mean not just chaplains, but also the officers themselves, right?
Everybody.
Yeah. But they were encouraging.
Not everybody. Maybe the, you know, 30%, the extremely vocal 20 to 30% of evangelical personnel within the military, and then the 20 or 30% added on to that just do it because everybody else does.
Did you run into that kind of religious pressure at West Point?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So, I mean, describe what typically might have happened.
Well, first, one of the things that you might have noticed from Dan's intro there, basic training, West Point, parachutist training, combat situations. These situations that I've kind of addressed specifically with issues in the past are more controlled, more disciplined, more stressful than standard environments. And that's where it becomes more, there's more pressure to conform, and there's more pressure on leaders to push their values on their on people within the unit. There's less opportunity for people to disagree and to dissent.
Is parachuting stressful or is it fun?
Any army training is stressful. Parachutist training in particular can be stressful. And I've done civilian skydiving. That's fun. But parachutist training, when you get tossed out of a military plane, you're generally tied down. You're carrying a lot of weight, and you hit the ground pretty hard.
Wow.
It's not really meant for comfort. It's meant for, you know, speed. And
well, so is they pushing you out of the plane? Are they praying at you, or what's happening?
Well, for example, we were all getting ready to do our first jump, and we were all in a group together, having been called in by the commander of our organization with his friend, the chaplain. Excuse me here. So our commander calls us in to a group, and the chaplain stands up to give us an inspirational message before we jump headlong into the wild blue yonder out of a perfectly good airplane, risking our lives. So the stress happens, and then here comes the chaplain to give his message by the chain of command. There are no, to make a long story short, there are no atheists at the end of static lines. Basically, you couldn't possibly be an atheist if you're going to jump out of an airplane.
According to the chaplain.
According to the chaplain.
The chaplain's on the plane with you?
No, we weren't on the plane at the time. Sometimes the chaplains come, sometimes not. That's just, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, so this old ridiculous chestnut that there's no atheists in foxholes just spreads down across the line in the military. They just don't believe in atheists.
It's very happily repeated for reasons I just don't understand. I don't want to assume in each case it's just to be discriminatory. But if there are good reasons for it, you know, I don't see them.
We know, listening to this show, that there's pervasive religion in the military. We've had different guests, Mikey Weinstein and others, and Jeremy Hall, whom you were involved with as well. And
our own staff attorney.
And part of your organization is aimed at dealing with chaplains, or what is it you do with chaplains in your organization?
So we do as much as they'll let us, which is not very much at all. We have a chaplain outreach program that specifically provides chaplains an opportunity to connect with the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers and other organizations like the American Humanist Association, American Atheists, Freedom from Religion Foundation, to the extent you'd be interested, American Ethical Union. We like to connect them so that they can better understand non-theism. You know, we have to understand that chaplains, despite, you know, the warts, so to speak, that they might have, they come from a certain background. They've been really raised in a religious environment. They've had lots of training. They work and live in a very theistic environment, and it is pervasive from their perspective. They don't necessarily understand or respect. There's a higher opportunity for them to not understand or respect our positions. And I feel it's incumbent upon non-theists to communicate that message to them as much as it is for them to reach out and find out that message from us.
Well, maybe you could talk about the fact that, for example, the Air Force has adopted guidelines that chaplains are not supposed to be talking about Jesus.
Yes. So on the one hand, if every chaplain in the military were to preach according to their personal faith tradition, if they were to stand up in front of groups and pray about Jesus in front of groups, it wouldn't be just the non-theists. The non-theists, the Hindus, the Buddhists, the Jews, they said, hey, it's not okay to talk about Jesus. And the Hindus and the Buddhists and the Jews and the Muslims, they get the respect that they deserve in ensuring that their commanders and their chaplains are not giving special privilege to Christianity. We as non-theists, we don't get that same respect. They think it's okay to give special privilege and special opportunities to communicate to theists, but that's without any regard for the non-theists in the unit.
So they can still talk about this generic God, right, and that's okay, but that still excludes a good chunk of people in the military, just like in the regular population who don't believe in a God at all.
Yeah, and it misses the point. People do have strong and held beliefs. You know, our new commander-in-chief, this is going to come up soon, I guess, but, you know, our new commander-in-chief, he talks about non-believers. I mean, you know, we appreciate, you know, there's a certain terminology there. It's non-theists still have strong, firmly held beliefs that are considered over a long period of time. I didn't just wake up yesterday and decide I was an atheist because I'd never heard of, you know, Jesus Christ or Muhammad. You know, I mean, I understand there are other options there, but I feel very firmly in my beliefs about the natural world and the importance of rational, reason-based ethics and community support and family and these types of things.
Were you raised religious, Jason?
Yes, I was raised Catholic.
So then what happened? Why did you? How did you change your mind to become an atheist?
It just never stuck. I mean, you know, I was 10 or 12, and Catholicism wasn't doing anything for me, so I went to the Episcopalians and the bishop, or the Baptists and the Methodists and the Lutherans and the pagans. And I mean, after a while, I was like, oh, well, maybe I just don't. Maybe, you know, humanist ethics are the best thing. And as soon as I plugged into that, that stuck. All the rest of it, you know, never quite made sense to me.
Now, you in your organization say that the non-religious affiliation in the U.S. Armed Forces makes up about 21%. Where do you get that statistic?
Well, that statistic, the study is on the MAAF website, again, maaf.info, or militaryatheist.org, foxholeatheist.org. You can find that study. It's the Population Reference Bureau, which is an independent organization. They pulled Army Manpower Data Agency statistics and did a broad range demographic study just in general. So buried in that study was a study of religion that had different areas. It was like 22% Catholic, 21% non-theist, and then some other smaller denominations.
So one chaplain out of five should be an atheist then.
One might think so.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We're talking with Jason Torpy of Military Association for Atheists and Freethinkers. We'll be right back after this break to talk about some very specific recommendations about how to keep the military and church separate.
Hi, I'm Haas from Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm Free Thought Radio.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, no gods, no master.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Geller, and we've been talking with Jason Torpy. It's spelled T-O-R-P-Y. Jason Torpy of the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers. And we're talking about the infiltration of the military by evangelical Christians and some of the reforms that are needed.
Now, one of the things that you've talked about doing, Jason, is a directive from the new, I guess we can say, Secretary of Defense to demonstrate the administration's commitment to implementing the changes that we need. What are some of those changes?
Well, some of those changes, Robert Gates, he's staying on, I believe, as Secretary of Defense.
Yes, he is, so he's not really new.
Yeah, so from the new administration, though, he might have some different priorities with the new administration. One of the things that is pointed out, there's an upside and a downside. For the upside, what we want to do is get some more support from the chaplains that are there. So as you vet new appointments, new people in high positions, you have to ask, you know, is that colonel or that general? Generals are appointed by Congress. Is that general in charge of an organization specifically focused on subverting the military for the purpose of proselytism? This is the kind of thing that works against diversity within the military and support for all service members regardless of belief system. That would be step number one. Now, again, going on with that, directives from the Secretary of Defense and a new commission to prevent these types of things from the top in the future, to prevent official statements pushing religion, to prevent commanders from making their personal values overcome their military values. And it has to be a top-down change. That is one of the real issues, because people at the lower level, they're trying to use their chain of command to get remedy for these issues, but all they see is things being ignored and people doing the wrong thing being promoted. Those are one of the big issues. So a top-down change, directives from the Secretary of Defense to make sure appointees and current generals are doing the right things that they need to do.
Now, when I see that word religious accommodation, you know, that's usually a buzzword that usually doesn't mean secular. Would people misunderstand that?
No, it's important for people to one of the good things about the regulations that are there is a lot of them are worded for religious accommodation, just like you say, and to support all service members regardless of without discrimination based on creed or belief system. But the problem is that the leaders that interpret these definitions and interpret these regulations and interpret these directives, they interpret non-theists out of the regulation. So there also has to be a good understanding that religious accommodation, that word religious accommodation, has to apply regardless of belief system, whether it's theistic or non-theistic.
Now, see, I think accommodation is passive. They're there in case someone needs a chaplain or religious services. But don't many of them interpret that word proactively?
Well, I understand what you mean. With chaplains in particular, they might look, there's basically three ways to look at it. One, I'm not going to do anything unless anybody asks me to. You know, that's entirely passive. And, you know, there's another way to say, I'm going to go out and push my personal religion on others. But there's a middle ground that says, I am going to, understanding that there are those out there that need my services, go out, find what services they need from me, and make sure that they get them. In certain cases, those services might be that chaplain's personal faith. In some cases, those services might be a non-theist who needs to understand, hey, who's out there like me? What other non-theist communities are out there? How can I build a solid foundation for my ethics and my family from a non-theistic perspective? What can you do to help me with that?
But in some cases, the chaplain might feel this higher calling from God to go out and proselytize and convert every member of the military to his particular religion. That happens a lot, doesn't it?
Yes, and unfortunately, that's inconsistent with, you know, the oath that they take and the requirements of the position that they've accepted.
Now, there is another interesting recommendation that you've made, which is to conduct a survey of military personnel to determine the pervasiveness of the problems of religious discrimination and proselytizing. So did you make this as a formal request of Gates, and have you had a response?
Yes, we presented this. It was to the Obama administration as he was coming in, and it referenced very specifically changes at the Department of Defense level, so it also applies to Secretary Gates. We have not had a response as yet. We understand that the transition team is very busy with the things that they are doing, with financial issues and, you know, rolling out the war, and we haven't gotten a response yet. We hope to hear about that response, but we understand the busyness that they have at these times. So
what is it about war and God? It seems like maybe it's because to be in the military, you have to be the submissive soldier of the leader, right? And then God is one way of trying to keep people in line. We've seen it all through history. You have the MAAF has groups, I see. You have one in Tikrit, one in Kuwait. You have one in Italy and one in Germany. And in the United States, you are actually recommending people connect with local free thought groups, such as Freedom From Religion Foundation chapters. But are there active groups in military bases around the world still, parts of MAAF?
Yes. Jeremy Hall, his case was actually started when he tried to have a meeting for MAAF. That's something that we do occasionally. The problem is with the rotation of personnel, those groups sometimes are transient in nature, but that's the whole point. MAAF, our whole purpose is not really this advocacy issue. We're trying to build community and trying to patch that gap that chaplains have. They're not reaching out, so in turn we're reaching out, and we hope to close that gap in the future. So we do have personnel in small communities to help people connect as they're overseas, because they can't connect through their local chaplains. That that service within the military is just not done for non-theists. And that's one of the real problems.
I'd like to call people's attention to the only, as far as I know, atheist in Foxhole Monument, which the Freedom from Religion Foundation hosts in Alabama at Lake Hypatia. And you can go to our website to see a picture of it under atheists in foxholes. There are many of them, are there not, Jason?
Yes, there are certainly many atheists in foxholes. I've seen the monument myself. I very much appreciate that personally, and I'm sure I speak for the whole, for all of the MAF members and other atheists in foxholes.
Thank you so much for joining us. And quickly, how can people get hold of the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers?
Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers is best reached at www.maf.info, maaf.info.
We have a lot of military members who listen to the show, so they can go to your website and find out more. Thanks for joining us. We want to thank our engineer today, Dan Ginsberg. We also want to thank Brian Turani, the outgoing producer of our show. He was the program director, and we want to thank him for his many years of production.
Brian, say goodbye. And he's here. He's shy.
He's shy. Our announcer is Buzz Kemper. All of our past shows you can listen to on archive and on podcast, and also go to iTunes to link up to the podcast there.
And you can join the Freedom from Religion Foundation. Ask for more information at ffrf.org. Look for the January-February issue of Free Thought Today. Call 1-800-335-4021 for more information. We thank you for joining us, and we thank our guest today, Jason Torpy. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.